The United States and the European Union are set to impose new sanctions against Russia in retaliation for alleged war crimes in Ukraine. Officials from the UN have confirmed the discovery of civilians apparently tortured and killed as Russians retreated from towns around Kyiv. This week, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia's actions amount to genocide. And yesterday, he spoke to the United Nations Security Council through an interpreter and asked them to do more.
The massacre from Syria to Somalia, from Afghanistan to Yemen and Libya, that should have been stopped long time ago, to tell you the truth. If tyranny had at least once received such a response to the war it had waged, it would have ceased to exist and honest peace had been guaranteed after it, and the world would have changed for sure. And then perhaps there would not be war in my country.
We want to take a step back now and look at how the world has responded to past atrocities. And for that, we've got historian Kenneth Davis. He's the author of Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Celeste. It's always a pleasure to join you.
Let's start with this claim by Zelensky that Russia is committing genocide in Ukraine. On Monday, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the Biden administration hadn't yet seen evidence that would rise to the level of genocide, but they're monitoring the situation. What is the legal definition of genocide that's relevant here?
Well, the relevant convention is the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, or the Genocide Convention. It's an international treaty that was first introduced after World War II. And it essentially defines genocide as the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. And that includes, I mean, it doesn't mean wiping out the entire race or nation, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction. I mean, this is highly legalistic, but I think we can all say it's, and I don't mean to be glib here, it's a little like obscenity. You know the famous definition of obscenity? I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I think that most people, most feeling people, would say what we have seen so far going on, the allegations supported by incredible amount so far of documentation, certainly rises pretty close to the question of genocide as it's officially defined. So I think that, you know, we can tiptoe around the legalisms here, but we're watching something go on that, you know, we'd like to believe never again, but that's been a mostly empty phrase.
What are the practical implications of calling something genocide, though? If the roots of this word and the legal definition are in World War II, was the intent to prosecute alleged war criminals?
Absolutely. And this was the Genocide Convention was conceived largely in response to World War II. This was legally defined by the United Nations in 1948 in language that was indeed shaped by the Soviet Union, which is kind of remarkable to consider. And as I said, it talked about killing members of the group, serious bodily mental harm, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And it was a recognition by the UN that this was an international crime and called for a treaty to prevent and punish it. Of course, that's where we've really fallen short in this arena, both preventing it and punishing it.
So let's talk about prevention. Historically speaking, you know, we were having a discussion among our newsroom on the many particular cases in which a world leader has said we should have stepped in earlier. And we wondered, when have people stepped in time? When it has been a case of genocide, is there historical evidence of a moment when the international community stepped in to prevent the larger tragedy?
Celeste, in a very bleak time in world history as we are in right now, I wish I could say, oh, yes, there have been these wonderful examples of how we've stepped in. But not only have there been many examples of not stepping in and rare examples, if any, of actual prevention of a genocide, but most throughout history have gone relatively unpunished. It is a reminder that one of the most famous quotes on this subject was from Hitler himself, supposedly. He was meeting his generals in 1939 on the eve of the invasion of Poland, and he talked about the aim of war, not to reach lines and conquer lines, but to annihilate the enemy. And he says, "Who today still speaks of the massacre of the Armenians?" He was referring to the murder of millions of Armenian people by an Ottoman Empire general, a Turkish general, an ally of Germany, and this happened during World War I. Stalin, of course, said something very similar at a certain point. Who's going to remember all this riffraff in 10 or 20 years' time?
No one. Chilling. So last month, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced that the Biden administration has officially determined that the violence against the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar was genocide. That's referring specifically to actions by the Burmese military in 2016 and 2017. A reminder, it's 2022. Why does it take so long to make these determinations?
Well, this goes to what is known as the International Criminal Court, which was created only about 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago, in fact, as a result in part of what happened in Serbia and Bosnia during that atrocity. As of March 2022, 123 member states are a part of that. The United States is not one of them. So the ICC, first of all, lacks universal jurisdiction. It lacks the ability to prosecute. They have prosecuted some people in absentia, but they really do rely upon having the person in court. We have right now, Amnesty International is reporting terrible crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing, that word that came about in the 1990s when we talked about the former Yugoslavia, going on in a region of Ethiopia where the crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing are ongoing. Of course, these things are not really widely reported in the press, in the Western press, just as other incidents and other people who may not look like Westerners have been subjected to this treatment, and the world sort of looks away. So we are at this terrible moment of a kind of recognition that we're not very good at preventing this, first of all, and certainly prosecuting it when it does happen.
Last question for you. As a historian, do you see historical evidence that there's a real danger in of acting too quickly, that the international community maybe would be too aggressive in calling things war crimes or genocide?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm not quite sure what the answer is, but I think that many of us feel that we are witnessing once again something that we're not quite certain how to respond to. The fear, of course, is that to go in and stop this somehow. These are really dangerous questions that bring us back to that moment in 1939 and the mid-1930s. War is a terrible, horrific thing. We're seeing it every day. And I'm certainly not advocating for expanding a world war. But we, like many people, I'm saying there must be something else between where we are today and a complete all-out confrontation that could border on nuclear confrontation. We have to be realistic about that.
Author and historian Kenneth Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste. I wish it was a happier conversation that we were having, but these are terrible things, and we certainly can't close our eyes to them.